and a roadie. Go tell and a roadie. Go tell and a roadie that everybody's dead.
This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington talking today with Michael Levine. Hey, it's great to have a chance to catch up with you.
Lovely to talk with you as well, Kate.
You have written the most incredibly creepy version of Go Tell Aunt Rhodie that I have ever heard as trailer music for Resident Evil 7. And I guess I have to congratulate you on music that is just so scary I almost didn't make it to the end of the piece.
Well, better that than being bored by it.
You know, there are so many folk songs about death and misery. And first of all, I'm really curious about why you chose this one.
Well, there were a couple of reasons. One was there was this accident that I was born in Japan. My father was a scholar of Japanese labor relations at the University of Wisconsin. And I was born in Tokyo and while he was researching a book. And so I grew up with a lot of things that were Japanese. And one of the things, the little bits of trivia that I knew was that Go Tell Aunt Rhodie has a Japanese equivalent called Musunde, which is the same tune with different lyrics. And this is due to sort of a historical anomaly, which was during the 1870s, American teachers came in and established the Japanese public school system and took a number of American songs and gave them Japanese lyrics. And as a result, most Japanese people believe that Musunde is a traditional Japanese song. And so when Capcom first was talking with me, they had liked this work that I did for, I had adapted this 80s happy bouncy tune, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, and turned it into this dark, scary thing that had a young singer from New Zealand named Lord singing that became kind of a hit. Now, I did this with my former assistant, Lucas Cantor. We were co-producers on it. And they were impressed by, you know, how scary and weird it turned out. And they thought maybe I could do the same thing. But they gave me an added restriction, which was they didn't want to pay for something expensive like Everybody Wants to Rule the World, but they did want something everybody would recognize. They wanted something that was some sort of universal song. And so I started thinking about Go Tell Aunt Rhodie and Musunde, and then I went, oh, Go Tell Aunt Rhodie, the old great goose is dead. Well, it's got that great word, dead. How about everybody's dead? Of course, the fun thing was to take this song, which is this sort of, you know, cheerful little kid's tune, and to give it this dark dimension. And there's something about the contradiction of the innocence and the horror that has always worked, particularly in the horror genre. It's something that it's a contradiction that has been embraced for some time. But this was a new approach to that.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, I if you think about it, the lyrics for the original folk song are pretty gloomy too, with everybody mourning the old gray goose and pretty graphic details about how she died.
So, yes, the goslings are crying.
Oh, gander's weeping. Oh, gander's weeping. Oh, gander's weeping because his wife is dead. And the goslings are mourning. The goslings are mourning. Goslings are mourning because their mother's dead. She died in the mill pond. She died in the mill pond. Died in the mill pond, standing on her head. We'll go tell Aunt Rhodie. Go tell Aunt Rhodie. Go tell Aunt Rhodie that the old
Well, we dumped all that, and I wrote a new verse. I actually wrote a couple of new verses, and then they thought that it kind of went on too long. I wrote new music for the verses as well. It was because I wanted to use the original folk song as a chorus. So I did that, and then it was just they had given me the plot of the game, and so I tried to allude to it without being too explicit, because that would be, what would the fun in that be? And so I think it's wonderful, actually. I've gone online and looked at people's transcriptions of the lyrics, and there's some pretty funny misunderstandings of it. But at any rate, we ultimately cut it down to one verse. I took the first half of verse one and the second half of verse two and put them together, and that's the verse on the long version.
Yeah, it's, as I said, it's absolutely horrifying. And I was looking on Reddit too. And did you have any idea that this piece would, I don't know, be generating all of these theories? And somebody even like took it and they've put it up backwards so that they could hear the words or different words.
Well, what's funny is that there are backwards elements in it. You know, if I were really smart, I would allude at this point that, yes, you should go and find them out. In fact, nothing consciously was put there, but there are lots of backwards elements, because that backwards is always creepy. So it doesn't shock me that people have found stuff. How well thought out it was and how well organized, yeah, that's something that could be debated.
How did you settle on the singer, Jordan Rain? What was it about her voice or her style that made her the perfect choice?
Well, first of all, the first person who sang the demo for it was Mariana Barreto, who is a wonderful singer who I've used on many occasions. And she's really handy because she's my daughter. And so it's my stepdaughter, but she's my daughter. Great singer. And she has a beautiful, light and airy sound. And she's actually on the track as all the background voices. And which is what she did for the Lord track as well. But just like in the situation with the Lord track, what they wanted was something, they wanted a voice that had a kind of, how would I describe it, a transgressive quality, that the very sound of the person's voice is vaguely threatening. And so I put out what I thought was a very cryptic Facebook post saying, you know, we're looking for somebody for a project, can't tell you what it is, whatever. And it was only up for a few hours before somebody from Capcom said, you can't say this, they'll trace it back to us, and then we're blown, so you've got to pull down the post. So the post had been up literally 4 or 5 hours when this happened. But in that time, the word got around, and I got something like 100 different demos from people close to it. We lost track, but at least 80 different demos, one of which was from Jordan's representative here in Los Angeles. Now, she is from New Zealand, but she lives in the UK. So and clients are in Japan. Is this getting, you know, global enough for you? Any rate, she sent us some links of, or he sent her representative sent us some links, and we went, wow, that's pretty cool. So we had narrowed it down to maybe a dozen possibilities, ran them by the client and Capcom, and they said, oh, we really like, you know, Jordan. And we were delighted, we meaning me and my assistant Bijan, just because we really thought she was a standout. She has a quality where she really draws you in. She doesn't have what you would call a quote-unquote pretty voice, but she has a compelling voice, which is what we needed.
It grabs you just right off the bat, because it's not a typical voice that you would hear, not just in a game score, but any time, really. So I think you really hit it out of the park by choosing her, because she adds this really scary, rough edge to the music as well.
Yeah, she's great. I don't know if you've listened to any of her music, but she's a fine songwriter as well, and I hope this helps her advance her career and lets the world know more about her. I interestingly enough, if I'm going to draw comparisons to this other singer from New Zealand, when Lucas Cantor and I did the Everybody Wants to Rule the World track with Lord, she was an unknown in the United States. And between the time that we did the track and the time that it was in Hunger Games Catching Fire, which was only 6 months later, she had become a huge star here. So I hope the same thing happens to Jordan.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And hopefully she can sing things that are maybe slightly less scary. I don't know, but certainly.
Her stuff, though, is definitely, there's a threatening quality to some of it that I really like.
Yeah.
She's not a quiet, withdrawn personality. There's definitely, as a singer, I mean, she's a lovely person, but there is a quality to her singing that really, you know, I would compare it not in sound, but in attitude to Annie Lennox or Chrissy Hynde or, you know, any of these classic voices where you are compelled to, that's the word I keep coming back to, you're compelled to listen to her.
Call to him and he will come. She'll run to him like he's the one. His arms that stretch, but when she's done, he'll be torn apart.
What was the recording session like? Because you said she was in the UK, so were you kind of doing it by remote?
It was a lot like the conversation we're having right now. it was. We were connected to the studio. She would do a take. I'd give her some feedback. We had a real time connection with the studio in London, and we kept. It was interesting trying to schedule it because of the time difference. Because not only were we on, but the clients were on too, who were in Tokyo. They stayed up till, you know, some ridiculous hour in the night for them. For me, it was morning, and for her, it was evening. So it was kind of fun in that regard. I have to say the clients were all just incredibly, there were two aspects to them. One was they were striving to get the coolest possible thing they could, which meant investigating every possible variation on this, which we did a lot of versions of this, which sounds like it could be a pain in the patootie, but honestly, they were so enthusiastic about trying to make something great. And that's really inspiring. And that's, you know, if I just wanted a job, if I just wanted to make money, I would have stayed in computer science or switched over to business or something when I was in school. But the reason that I'm a musician, the reason that most people are professional artists is because you want to do something great. And that the fact that that was their drive, they're truly artists. And you just, you know, it demands respect.
Yeah, definitely. Plus, the more takes you have and the more different nuanced versions you have, that I imagine the easier it is to finally get a version that you're really happy with, that like totally nails it.
Just the reverse.
Oh.
There were too many good possibilities in the end. They went vacillating between, you know, this one and that one. It was, we managed to completely confuse ourselves, but we're very happy with the one we finally chose.
Well, once you got her recording down, the post-production is just, I think that's what really just makes it so terrifying. And I'm wondering if you ever like scared yourself with some of the sounds and some of the music that, effects that you put in there.
No, not really. But I mean, you know, it's like, you know how too much how things are made. But what I thought was fascinating about the process is where we started was something that sounded much more like a conventional song with a few sound effects and bings and bongs and stops here and there. By the time we were done, it really is this minimalist piece. I mean, at times it's just her voice and weird stuff. And it's much like the avant-garde music that, you know, all us hipster kids played when we were kids, when we thought we were being really out. I mean, it's like I got a license to be as weird as I wanted to be. And as an artist, that's about the best possible assignment you can get.
Oh, absolutely. And I listened to your concert piece, Divination by Mirrors, for Musical Saw and Strings. And so I can really hear, I mean, it sounds like that sort of sound really appeals to you.
Well, that particular piece was the culmination of my left and right brains together. There's a lot of stuff that about that piece that is highly intellectual in origin, in terms of it's based on a lot of music theory and aesthetic theory and so forth. It has to do with Fibonacci series and the golden section and various different kinds of musical mirrors and so forth. But at the same time, I wanted to have something that you could actually hum. And that's kind of the squaring of the circle that has been the big aesthetic problem in all the arts, but particularly in music, for the last 100 years, which is, how do you make something that violates these rules, because all great art violates the rules of its time, and yet at the same time maintains this kind of connection to something that is accessible and human, and so that it's not simply so far removed from our experience that it's that we can't relate to it, and yet at the same time is not so familiar that it's boring. And this has been something that has been, particularly in the classical music world, the concert music world, as it's called, has been something that's been wrestled with for some time. I actually think it's one of the reasons I ended up doing film and television music, is because you're a little more free to square that circle, to bridge that gap. You can have things that are truly weird. You can have things that are truly accessible, and neither one is considered a betrayal.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. There are so many pieces of music in films and games that if you just played them on their own, people would not run the other way necessarily, but it would be a big, big leap for them to say, yeah, I love that. But in the context of the film or the game or the TV show, it absolutely works. So I think it's a great way of kind of leading people to listen to more contemporary music.
Well, I think that to wax anthropological here, I'm sorry, but you got the child of a university professor, so my apologies to all those out there who are, bored by this. But I think that if you look at the origin of music, it co-evolved with language, but it also co-evolved with dance. It co-evolved with painting. There was a time when the arts and human connection, when our tribal connection to each other, was all one thing. In fact, there are something like 40% of the languages in the world today, the word for music and dance is the same word. And at some point, it no longer became the thing that everybody did. It became something that specialists did. And then it got fragmented further into the arts becoming all these different things. And one of the things that fascinates me about, whether it be games or television or film or whatever, is that we're now once again putting back together these different art forms in a way that I think really harkens back to our origins. And because games are interactive, in this game is a VR game, which is about as interactive as you get, it further involves people in the arts in a way that I think that we're wired for.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's just incredible how much having the music in a game, or in a few cases not having it, can really completely change the experience. And I know people now are really trying to figure out what the role of music in a VR game is, because it can take you out of the immersion of being in this world if all of a sudden you're hearing the music. So that raises a whole, a completely different set of challenges for people to figure out.
Well, yeah, but I feel like that's just a prejudice. It's there's a famous story about Alfred Hitchcock and his composer on, I think the film is Lifeboat. And The composer was a Hugo Friedhofer, who was, you know, a famous composer from the 1940s and so forth. This is before he was started working with Bernard Herrmann. And he said, and Hitchcock supposedly said to Friedhofer, I don't know whether there should be music in this film. I mean, where is it coming from? And Friedhofer said, the same place your camera is located.
Good answer. Hadn't thought of that, but yeah, you're right.
So I think it's the same thing. I think that people will find ways to integrate it into VR that are increasingly organic to the medium. But it is the reason it exists, the reason that music exists in storytelling, which is what this is, a form of storytelling, is that it allows you to have an emotional dimension that is parallel to whatever the actual physical events are and whatever dialogue is going on.
Well, what were some of the specific challenges that you had with writing music for the trailer as opposed to writing music for the game? I mean, did you write to picture? Was the video done at that point?
No, not really. We sort of tag-teamed it, and I really started with a summary of the game. And I didn't ever really do much specifically to the trailer until toward the end when we had to make some timing things work. But for the most part, everything that's in the music of the song is really based on the content of the story of the game.
Well, Michael, again, congratulations. This music just absolutely sucked me in right from the first moments. And it's been really wonderful to talk with you about it and kind of get inside of it.
Well, thanks so much, Kate. Lovely to have this conversation.